Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning in to this morning's episode of Just Us Talks with Keisha, which is my weekly Blog Talk Radio show in which I discuss everything from the current events to social justice to the law. If you are tuning in for the first time, my name is Keisha Hillman, and I am an attorney based in the great state of Maryland. I practice primarily in the areas of family law, criminal law, and personal injury. Now, if this is your very first time tuning in to this show, it's probably important for you to know that a part of what I do is roast and troll this current administration because of all of the, what's the word I'd like to use? Nonsense is a good word for radio purposes. All of the nonsense that comes out of this administration, and it's every day we're given more. Every day. There's something else that this administration has said, has done. You know, and so this morning I woke up to a tweet about, I thought it was like a new word for coffee or something, and come to find out it was just like a misspelled tweet. So apparently president at that, it's still hard for me to say that word. But apparently, I guess he was in the middle of one of his late night rants on Twitter like he usually is, and I'm not sure if he just decided to stop short in the middle of the tweet or whatever. But anyway, everything that he does becomes an issue, and it gives us all a good laugh. And the truth of the matter is all of these things would be hilarious if they weren't also very, very scary. Because the thing that I cannot stop thinking about is, but what about our standing in the world? On a world stage, how does this make our country look? Does it make us look more or less vulnerable to our enemies? Does it make us look more or less inept, you know, before our enemies? And so, you know, that's one of the things that always crosses my mind every time I wake up to a middle of the night, early morning gasp administration. So, you know, if you haven't been tuning in, just turn on your television, go to any social media outlet, and you will see something else that makes you throw up your hands to say, is this really where we are in 2017? But I really want to also talk about just kind of where we are in this country in terms of social justice, because that's one of my primary passions, and it's one of the things that made me become a lawyer in the first place, is my passion for civil rights and for social justice and social justice reform. If you've been paying attention at all, you probably know that, you know, in Portland, over the last 2 weeks, there were two young men. And I think the third one was only injured, and you know, I'm not really sure because I keep seeing conflicting stories. But apparently there was another racially motivated incident, either racially or xenophobic or Islamophobic, something phobic, which is kind of par for the course at this point, but incident on a train in Portland, and there was a young white man who was apparently harassing either one or two Muslim women. And innocent bystanders intervened to assist, and this man stabbed two of them, at least two of them, to death. And it breaks my heart, not only for the families of, you know, the Muslim women but certainly for the families of the victims who lost their lives. But it just, it breaks my heart because every single day in this country, you have white people who decide that they want to go on racial rants, you know, calling people sand niggers and nigger niggers and, you know, I mean, you know, this is where we are in this country. And I am a firm believer that election of Donald Trump made matters a million times worse. Now, I firmly believe that these were issues that were that are firmly embedded in the bedrock of this country, because after all, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and, you know, all of these things, all the civil rights movement itself, did not change the hearts and minds of the people that think that black and brown people don't belong in this country and should be treated as less than human and should not be afforded citizenship and all of these things. People didn't just go away, right? It just means that the law decided that regardless of your racial and, you know, ignorant foolishness, regardless of any of that, we're going to pass laws in order to protect marginalized groups. And so you got to ask what happened to those people. Those people lived and still live. Those people procreated and taught their children whatever their values were. And here we are in 2017 with those people and their offspring spewing racial and, you know, otherwise hateful rhetoric in public places. I mean, you see it all the time. You know, you have these viral videos. And it's a lot of, the funny thing is, it's a lot of white women. And that's a whole nother segment. But, you know, it's an issue. And the election of Donald Trump certainly brought those crazy people to the forefront again, because what it did was it normalized this type of hatred. Because if you remember, during the 2016 election, Donald Trump basically made it his platform to spew hatred and vile, disgusting filth against everyone who was not a straight white man in this country. And it was rather terrifying to be a member of a marginalized group at that point, because you knew that if this man is elected, this type of behavior is going to be normalized. And that's exactly what happened. And so, again, here we are. And so you have people who really believe that, hey, my president can do it. My president can say it. So now Donald Trump is the president, and he's completely a bigot. So, of course, I can go into the grocery store and call you, you know, a maid or, you know, whatever kind of foolishness these people want to spread. The problem with that is you have situations like Portland. You have situations like, you know, turn on the news, right? These situations are occurring far too often. And so as a social justice and, you know, civil rights person who wants to advocate and fight for the needs of, you know, marginalized groups, I ask myself often, what can I do? What can we do to help to stop the spreading of this vile filth? What can we do? And so, you know, I certainly welcome any sort of feedback, because I'd love to know. What can we do? And so anyway, that wasn't everything that I wanted to talk about today, obviously. But I definitely wanted to start there, because it's every week I feel like it's something else that prompts me to have this conversation at some point during my show. Yeah. That's where we are, folks. That's where we are. But one of the other things that I wanted to talk about today, to me, it kind of goes along the same line of just disparate treatment, inequities, and internalized and systemic racism. And that is the issue of plea bargaining. And you may ask, how does plea bargaining kind of factor into all of those other things? How does that happen? So let me explain. If you look at the issue of the criminal justice system, and you examine, just from start to finish, examine the stopping of a person who maybe, you know, fitting the description, and again, tuned in, you know that this is what I do. And I understand that this show may not be for everyone, because here's the thing. I firmly believe in calling a spade a spade. That is what I do in my personal life and my professional life, and I will continue to do so, because I'm not going to coddle a lie to make someone feel comfortable in their bigotry. I'm never going to do that, because guess what? It only serves to help you feel better about your bigotry while simultaneously serving to continue the oppression of marginalized groups. And so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say something that's not true or otherwise sugarcoat what is the truth. Because guess what that means? Guess where that leads us? That leads us to exactly where we are in this country right now, where for so long people were, you know, if you call out, even today, if you call out racism, you call out any of these things, the immediate response is to call you a racist. If you ever mention white supremacy or white fragility or anything, you're called a racist, which, don't get me started on why that is absolutely ludicrous. But it's important to know, and I digress for a second, but, you know, it's important to know that the criminal justice system is inundated with racism and bigotry, and it's problematic. And you talk about stop and frisk policy, racial profiling, all of these sort of beginning introductions into the criminal justice system, even going to the school-to-prison pipeline, right? We know that research has shown repeatedly that the people that are looped into the school-to-prison pipeline are black and brown children, right? It's not usually white children who are slammed to the ground by teachers or suspended by school administrators for their hair or, you know what I mean? I can go on and on and on. And so follow me here. So the introduction into the criminal justice system is usually overwhelmingly overrepresented in the criminal justice system, although underrepresented in the population at large. Let's start there, right? So now you're walking down the street. You fit the description because you are black or brown, because you look illegal, because fill in the blank, right? So, right, you've already been racially profiled. So now you're stopped. Your rights may or may not be infringed upon, and I've done several shows about knowing your rights and why it's important to know your rights, whether you are in a vehicle, whether you're just walking along the street, whatever the case may be, know your rights. Always know your rights. So anyway, you're stopped, you ask questions, your rights may or may not have been infringed upon. Let's just say you're arrested. You are arrested maybe you do not have the financial wherewithal to hire an attorney. Problem number one, or one of the problems. You don't have the financial wherewithal to hire an attorney because hiring lawyers is very, very expensive, or at least it can be. So you don't have the financial wherewithal to hire an attorney to represent you in this criminal case. And so you apply to have a public defender represent you. I've talked about this repeatedly because public defenders are, you know, some of my best friends are public defenders. But what I mean is, you know, public defenders are not any less of an attorney because they decided to work for the public as opposed to working in the private sector. But they are historically overworked, right? There are more cases than one person can handle. And so what happens is not all of their cases are able to be given the amount of attention to detail as may be necessary to successfully argue a motion or argue the case at trial, right? And so what happens is they're not prepared for court, and then you get to court, you have, you know, a prosecutor who may be overzealous, you know, who more times than not has overcharged the crime, whatever the case may be. So now you have someone who is in the criminal justice system. They may or may not have committed the offense, but you don't have an attorney. You can't afford an attorney. So your attorney does not have the time to really look into the issue to see whether or not there's some kind of defense, whether or not, you know, a conviction is likely, you know, none of those things. And so what happens is you're met with a plea bargain, right? And so understand this. Plea bargains can be a very, very good tool. However, as someone who looks at these things all the time, fully understand and I see the issues with plea bargaining. Because just in that scenario that I just gave you, now you have a situation where you can't afford a lawyer. Your lawyer doesn't have time to really look into it. And so now they're saying, you know what, you should take a plea. But you may be thinking, but I didn't do it. I didn't do anything. Why should I take a plea? Because guess what? Maybe you are faced with a situation in which you may be dealing with some kind of time. And, you know, who knows what you were arrested for, but you may be dealing with some kind of time. And we have a caller. Let's see if the caller has a question. Good morning, caller. You are on with Just Us Talks with Tisha. Do you have a question? Good morning, caller. You are on with Just Us Talks with Tisha. Can you hear me?
I was just coming in to listen.
Oh, okay. That's absolutely fine. Okay. And so we have a situation in which the person may now be dealing within the criminal justice system, and you want to fight the case, but you can't afford to fight the case. And so you have a situation where your lawyer can't, you know, is not prepared for trial because they have 1,000 cases and they are one person. And so what happens? Your lawyer says you should probably take a plea deal because maybe you are facing 30 years for whatever the offense may be. Because understand this, in the criminal justice system, the prosecutors, in my opinion, have a substantial advantage because not only do they have the forensics folks, they have the police, they have, you know, various law enforcement agencies, they have all of these powers at their disposal. And there is a saying that the grand jury will indict a ham sandwich. And that is absolutely 100% true. Because I've worked in prosecutor's offices, I know how this works. So you present information or an indictment to the grand jury, 9 times out of 10, they're going to issue an indictment. So here you are, brown, black person walking down the street, never been in trouble with the law, you can't afford a lawyer, now you've been arrested, now you have this person who cannot afford or doesn't have the time to work your case, you have this person now saying, take a plea deal. Take a plea deal. And so you're faced with what in the world has happened. I go walking down the street and now I'm facing prison time or jail time for something that I did not do. And guess what? This is the reality, folks. This is the reality of life. And this is the reality of life for black and brown people in this country, because guess what? The system is not set up for you to win. It's not. And that is the truth of the matter. And I'm so sorry to tell you, but that's how it works. And again, like I said, if you think that I'm making this up, think about the history of this country and the fact that where did all those, you know, racist and bigoted, you know, mentalities go, right? They didn't just go away. People didn't just stop being racist and bigots. And, you know, we see this every single day, right? And this certainly seeps into our criminal justice system, which is why when people say that racism is systemic, this is what we mean. So now you have someone caught up in the criminal justice system who's faced with the idea of going to jail. And guess what happens? When you decide that you are going to plead guilty, there are several things that you may want to ask your lawyer. How might going to trial affect my potential sentence? What types of plea bargains do prosecutors offer in this case? What are any important legal issues that could raise up, that we could raise on appeal? And one of the most important things is, am I giving up by pleading guilty? Because usually, folks, if you decide to take a plea deal and you have to plead guilty to whatever you've been charged with, you give up a lot of rights. And some of those rights are your right to then come back and file an appeal. So now you're stuck. And you're stuck all because you're a black or brown person in this country walking down the street minding your own business and you can't afford to hire a lawyer. And so now you're stuck. Now you're stuck. And you want to make sure that before you take a plea deal that you know exactly what it is that you're giving up. Make sure that your lawyer says it in writing. This is what you are giving up if you take a plea deal. Because in some situations, you may have to pay restitution. You may be on probation or parole, whatever the case may be. Because guess what? And I tell people this all the time. When you go to, I understand the purpose of plea deals. And in some cases, they can be helpful. But again, this whole segment is about the disparities and the issues with taking plea bargains and how they are fraught with issues. But they certainly can be a helpful thing in certain cases, right? But you have a situation in which, you know, you have someone, again, faced in the system dealing with going to trial. Because what happens is when you go to trial, you're basically taking a roll of the dice. You don't know what type of mood the judge is going to be in. And I tell people all the time, if you think it doesn't matter, you're crazy. You don't know who the judge is. You don't know what their background in terms of, you know, what their biases may be. Because guess what, folks? They're human. Judges are human. And so you're dealing with all of these things when you go to court. You don't know who is in your jury. Right, you don't know all of the things. While your attorneys may have had the opportunity, you know, to certainly pick the jury, you still don't know every single thing there is to know about your jury. So you don't know. You're taking a roll of the dice when you go to trial, and this is why a lot of people can be tempted to take a plea bargain, even if they didn't in fact do what it was that they've now been accused of doing. So you may not want to take that roll of the dice, because if you're looking at, you know, prosecutor says, well, we'll offer you 9 months probation versus 20 years in prison. Hey, that may seem like a pretty good deal. But this is why I say it's problematic. Our criminal justice system is fraught with issues. And until we really deal with that, until we really look at what the system that we are really a part of, and until we really fight to dismantle the systemic oppression that is embedded in these systems, these are the types of outcomes we're going to have. You're going to continue to have situations where you have a Brock Turner, and I always mention Brock Turner because it's the most egregious, egregious and vile outcome in the criminal justice system that I can possibly imagine in terms of someone not being punished for a crime. With the exception of the case that I talked about a couple weeks ago where young white guy drugs and rapes his sister and the judge says, hey, well, we're not going to punish you because the stigma that you must have had to go through with just being accused of this or, you know, this coming out is enough punishment for you. Yeah, don't get me started on that. But we know that for people that are wealthy and straight and white and men, the system is not equal. Because guess what, folks? The white men, and just white men in general, are afforded a level of privilege that people that look like me don't have. And so this is where you have black and brown folks, and even just poor folks, who get caught up in this idea of plea bargaining because the system is not really set up for people that look like us. And that may sound harsh, and you may even think that that's not true. But trust me when I say it is. It's very, very true. And until we deal with that, you will continue to have situations like Brock Turner. You will continue to have situations where police officers, neighborhood watch people, whomever, get to murder in cold blood black and brown folks and, you know, get 72 hours, 30 days, whatever the case may be, before they have to give a statement to the police. And then when they do give a statement, what they actually say does not match at all the video. But guess what? The most they may face is a firing, right? And until we deal with this, the system itself, we will continue to have these unjust outcomes. And so what do we do? That's always my question. What do we do? And I'm certainly open to suggestions because my goal is to leave this world a better place than I found it. And so I hope that in my practices, in doing family law, criminal law, personal injury, and just talking to clients and people in general, my goal is not only to provide information, my goal is also to promote justice, to promote equality, because those are the things, in my opinion, that are going to make this world a better place. So how can you make the world a better place? Know your rights. That's what I tell folks every day. And how does that help making the world a better place? Is because knowing your rights, you can certainly explain these things to other people. You can certainly encourage other people when they are faced with these situations. But in order to know your rights, you got to get the information. If you have any questions about where to get information, follow me on Facebook. Or like us on Facebook, right? Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, and tune in every week to Just Us Talks with Tisha, where you will always hear the truth. You will always get information, and at the end of it all, you will always know you're right. Tune in next week, folks. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks for tuning in.